You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Paul Eales.
It's Turkish delight for Tyrrell Hatton as he wins an incredible six-man playoff.
It's hard to put into words. It's just been a crazy day. The playoff was mental. I'm so happy to win again and hard to put into words.
We hear more from the gobsmacked 28-year-old following an amazing few days in Antalya, and we find out about a bizarre disqualification for something straight out of a Hollywood movie. We'll also let you know who came up trumps in the Challenge Tour Grand Final, and we reveal our expert tips for this week's Nedbank Golf Challenge in Sun City. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm joined today by European Tour winner Paul Eales. Eelsy, how are you?
I'm in great shape. Thank you very much, Dan.
And Golfing World producer Jack Hayward is here. Jack, how are you?
Yeah, very well. Fresh from a few days in Turkey last week, so yeah, feeling good.
Fresh from multitasking as well, I believe, because we were doing our sound check, you were talking about breakfast, and you were driving and eating your muesli at the same time.
Yeah.
A, is this legal?
Probably not. But it was every time there's a red light, you see. Because I had to leave super early to get in this morning, to get in for our very early call time.
So. It was an early call time, and
it's
was late.
It's not like texting, is it?
Yeah, no, it's not. No, that's very true. I was late today.
So never when the car's in motion.
I do apologise for that. What an incredible week in Turkey, Eelsy.
Oh, the European Tour never stops giving, does it? It's just brilliant. It seems to be there's more stories week in, week out, and boy, haven't we got some stories to talk about this week? It was fantastic.
Have you ever seen anything like it? We've got a six-man playoff. We had golf under floodlights on the European Tour for the first time. The course looked immaculate. We had brilliant play. We had danger on holes as well. Something for everyone, I hope, over the last 4 days.
Yeah, I think so. When you look back to, say, Rory McIlroy's comments around the time of the Dunhill, where he's saying you're finishing at kind of minus 20 or minus 15, you're finishing 30th place on the European Tour at the moment. I think it could also be said of the PGA Tour, mind you. But I think it's a valid point. You know, you end up with a playoff, six-way playoff, which is, you know, fantastic fun. Playing under the floodlights, fantastic fun. So it was an incredible climax to an incredible week on the European Tour. But yeah, you've got to think with six players at minus 20, was the course playing a little bit too soft, a little bit too easy?
Tyrrell Hatton, of course, was successful. His second Rolex Series title, claiming victory in that six-man playoff under the floodlights at the Turkish Airlines Open. Hatton entered the final round, three shots off the lead, held by Matthias Schwab at the Montgomery Max Royal, but ended as the last man standing. He's had his issues. He's got this wrist injury that he seems to have had for a couple of years. I mean, you would have thought he would have sorted that out by now. I think he's going to have surgery, isn't he, between now and the end of the calendar year. It must be difficult for a golfer to nurse that, to manage it, but he's done brilliantly to win again and win another big one.
Yeah, I think when you're a top player, you've got the chance to take a break from a schedule and rest things up. Whereas if you're at the bottom and you're trying to make a check to get in the top 115 or whatever, you need to keep playing. So, you know, he's got a chance. And I suppose the last thing he wants to do is to go under the knife. Most people would rather try and rehab and have a little bit of rest and get it back. And, you know, it's just one of those things. He'll know. He'll have the best people looking after him. And you know, what a great win.
I get the feeling that he divides opinion, Tyrrell Hatton, Jack, because we see him get a bit grumpy, maybe in a little bit more, you know, angry on the golf course. He gets down on himself, those around him. He was calling out people for cameras yesterday. But he seemed to get over that maybe quicker than he did a few years ago. And to me, he still ends up with a smile on his face more often than not. Have I got that right? Is he one of the good guys or one of the bad guys, do you think?
I think he's somewhere in between. I think you've hit the nail on the head. I'll sit on the fence as well. Yeah, he's a bit of a Marmite character. I think he's great for the game. I think he's great to watch. Personally, I'd rather see people remonstrating, chuntering up the fairways and making birdies in the way that he did, particularly in that playoff, obviously the little chip in and stuff like that. I think he's box office. I think he's great to watch. Just such a good home player. First on the European Tour this year in strokes game with his approach play, and second this week, which again, so yeah, yet again, the backbone of his success.
Does he need that edge, do you think?
I think so. You see it a lot in top-level sportsmen. If you compare it to other sports, you might see in football, let's say, you see someone like a Cristiano Ronaldo or an Alexis Sanchez, both famous for kind of remonstrating. But from a sports psychology point of view, I think it's widely kind of believed and kind of researched that these guys need to get this stuff out of their system. Within golf, you see Patrick Reed kind of being the American equivalent who will kind of, he'll swear left, right and centre. He'll get very, very angry with himself, with the fans. But I think it's it's key to his success, that getting it out of his system so it's not kind of bubbling under the surface.
Because when I always watch golfers' interviews, a lot of them don't really say too much. They're very level-headed. It's as if they know that they've got to stay within a certain level because they have to prepare to play. They don't want to, you know, get too high or get too low. I mean, Tyrrell's not like that at all, is he, it appears?
No, I think it's one of those that they are human at the end of the day. They're all different characters, that the game needs these characters, and it's great that they can come out. It's not going to be everybody's cup of tea. Neither was Phil Mickelson, neither was Tiger. So, you know, some of the greats in the game that we've had, and Tyrrell is just, that's how he is, and he's not making any apologies for the fact that sometimes he has a bit of a grump and things aren't going his way, but he's not the only one, and I think he's great for European Tour. I think he's great for golf, and he is a great golfer, end of.
Let's hear from our Turkish Open winner, Tyrrell Hatton.
It's hard to put into words. It's just been a crazy day. Obviously, the playoff was mental, and I'm so happy to win again, and hard to put into words.
I mean, what does this mean to you? I know you say you can't put it into words, but is there anything at the moment?
Well, it's just, I said to my team that if I was lucky enough to win again, then I'd definitely sort of enjoy it more and not really, I think it's easy to take it for granted. So, and I mean that in the best terms possible, but yeah, it's incredible to get my fourth win on the European Tour, and obviously that wraps up the Masters for next year as well, which was definitely on my mind coming into the tournament, and I knew I only had two events left in my schedule, so delighted to win and obviously wrap that up.
Obviously you said you were looking for a good week this week, massive win. Yeah. Going forward, how good is that?
Yeah, incredible, and I'm really excited for my week off now next week, and see, spend time with family and friends and enjoy that, and then I'm going to head out to Dubai a little early and just get comfortable out there, and hopefully we can have another good week to end the season.
Tyrrell Hatton speaking after his win in Turkey. There had only been two other six-man playoffs on the European Tour. Scott Stephen McAllister won the 1990 Vigno Verde Atlantic Open, and England's Mark Foster won the 2003 Dunhill Championship. I think Paul Boxey was involved in the 1990 Vigno Verde Atlantic Open, but he didn't win it, because if he did, he would never let us hear the last of it.
No, well, but don't forget, he did win the Italian,
yes, he did,
which is the fifth
apparently
major.
So.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, very good. What I want to know is, why did we have two groups of three and not one six-man playoff all going at the same hole?
Well, it's more manageable, isn't it? You know,
I don't want more manageable. I want six players on the same hole.
Well, what you want, you don't always get. And John Paramore, who was in charge, and he's decided, right, you three are going to draw. Right, you'll go first. You'll wait behind the green. The next three will come down, and then we'll see what happens from there. And that's how they did it.
I agree. I think they went for the logistically sensible option, but a bit of chaos might have been a bit of fun.
I think, and I might be wrong with this, but the Nissan Open of 2001, won by Robert Allenby, who I think might have won every single playoff he was ever in, was a six-man playoff, and they all played the same hole at the same time. I mean, it must be quite difficult, because you don't know exactly where you stand, you know, what you've got to do, because if you're in that first group, you don't know if, you know, a par, a birdie or whatever enough.
You know you've got to make a four.
Yeah, I think it's a par five, isn't it? It's not actually, you know, having been lucky enough to be on site there last week, it's a very tight par five, but it's not a very penal par five. The water's not really in play down to the left. The traps aren't too punishing unless you get a nasty line, unless you plug in one in the face of it. So actually, it's a very birdieable hole, even with that pin location back left, which is obviously tricky to access. I think if you play it sensibly, you should have a good shot at four. So guys knew that.
And Jack, you were mentioning that, you know, 20 under par is a too high a winning score or lower winning score, and you think, well, there are five par fives on that course that are all gettable, so that's where the guys went to town, didn't they?
So I think minus 20 is fine as a winning score. It's just the volume of people who are reaching that target, and you look all the way down the leaderboard, it's an incredible
amount. The guys are good, you know, they're getting better and better year on year, and we're going to expect more and more of this.
I agree. I just think the golf course is, you know, you want to see, you know, my idea of a perfect golf course, like it is for many, is Augusta National, where there are birdie opportunities out there for sure for these guys who, as you say, are such incredible golfers on both the PGA Tour and the European Tour. But there's obviously the peril lying around the corner at all times. Whereas I think this course, it's more of a resort course. There wasn't too much peril lying in wait for them. There's a tough stretch, 5, 6, 7, but yeah, it's not too penal out there.
Well, it's a good job it was a resort course because it had the floodlights on, which we needed switching on, didn't we, Dan?
Yeah, we did. We'll get to that in a second. I just want to rewind to the start of the final day because very few people would have thought this was going to go to a playoff. Matthias Schwab was playing brilliantly, had a 3-shot lead going into the final day, was playing the par fives better than anybody else all week. And as you mentioned, the amount of those big holes that he could potentially birdie again, you thought he probably will win this fairly comfortably given what we'd seen the previous days. I know 3 shots is not a massive lead, but I think the percentages would say that a good 78% of golfers get it done going into the final round. But he never got away from the field, did he? He didn't play particularly well on that last day. But to counter that, although the chasing pack were inching closer, no one actually sort of passed him, did they? It was a strange day in that sense because Hatton had chances, Hebert had chances to draw level, and it was only right at the end that we saw Kitayama play the last and birdie the last. We saw Van Rooyen roll in that big eagle, and Hebert and Perez as well managed to birdie the last, and of course Schwab didn't.
Yeah, I actually think he did. I think he did a pretty good job. He's never won on the European Tour. It's pretty hard to get across the line for the first time. It's definitely probably at least doubly as hard as it is once you've got one under your belt, once you know you can do it and proving to yourself. So I think he actually did a decent job of holding off the field, like you say, just kind of just keeping himself just ahead, and just got caught up at the end, sadly for him. But yeah, he's a winner in waiting. He's got 5 top 5s in his last 9 events. That's consistency that will surely undoubtedly lead to a victory in the not-too-distant future.
Six-man playoff, who was the man that you thought might win going into that? I just think straight away, Schwab having parred the last, I sort of discounted him almost straight away. And I was thinking maybe even Kitayama, he went to the range afterwards, he might have been the man. He was on his own. The TV cameras kept looking at Kitayama. I think he was in some sort of canteen. We saw Perez and Van Rooyen with their caddies and I think maybe wives, girls and partners, whatever, having a bit of a chat, a bit more relaxed. I thought Kitayama might have been the man, massive off the tee as well. Who did you fancy going into the playoff?
Well, it's such a lottery, isn't it? You know, and splitting into the 2-3s, as you said. To me, Van Rooyen, he'd made eagle. He was the one that
he was pumped,
shouldn't have got in the playoff, that did get in the playoff.
Had a shocker on the first hole.
You know, Matthias, again, he would have been a little down because he only made 5 on the 72nd hole. So, again, he had a chance to win. So there's all these emotions, but, you know, the guys have been around. They're just, right, OK, this tee shot. I've got to get this tee shot away. If I get the tee shot away in the playoff, I've got a chance to knock it on the green. I'm going to make my 4 and I'm not going to go out.
So you're not telling us who you fancy going into the playoff?
I said Van Rooyen.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. You're not listening.
No, I'm not.
You never
I just thought the mindset's interesting. I think the players who finish badly and have had that, you know, Schwab, you could tell he was shaking his head, wasn't he, on the 77? And it's, oh my God, this is just, how has this got away from me? It's a Rolex Series event. It's $2 million. It's my first win. I've played well all week. It's the par 5. And you could see it in his, you know, his mind was sort of turning over. I felt gutted for him.
Yeah, I agree. I think taking all those factors into account, just like we said with the final round, yeah, he didn't light any fireworks in that final round, but he did just do enough to keep himself ahead and did fantastically well in the playoff to kind of stick around. And of course, as we know, I'm sure we'll come on to it, probably should have. It was a bit of a sitter he missed at the last playoff hole, as it turned out. But, you know, I think you have to back someone like Tyrrell in that situation. His iron play is so fantastic under pressure. He's been there, done it before, won a Rolex Series event before. So, Tyrrell was my man and, came through.
Fantastic chipping, wasn't it?
Good. Oh, unbelievable chipping. And that's the experience that Tyrrell brought to the party. When you think about Matthias, you know, he'd been at college only a couple of years ago or 3 years ago. He was a top amateur. He came through Q School in 18, I think. I was at 17, and then he had his first year. He finished 72nd, so it's a steady progress up the rankings. Whereas Tyrrell's been there, done it, got the Rolex bib, and
chipped in on the first playoff hole to make birdie. Schwab and Kitayama also made birdie on the first. We lost 3 players, didn't we, on that first hole? Perez, Hebert and Van Rooyen crashing out. And then Kitayama had a great chance to win it on the second playoff hole. He looked absolutely distraught with about 10-footer.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He genuinely looked like he had a tear in the eye walking off that green, which maybe I would too if I was competing for $2 million winning prize. And walking away with, I think it was about $400,000. It's not too bad. It's a pretty good week's work. But he looked heartbroken and right to be. You know, he's had 2 wins this year. It's been an incredible rookie season. He's now jumped ahead of Robert McIntyre in that Rookie of the Year battle, ahead of him in the Race Dubai standings, as we'll find out in a moment. So he's had a fantastic season, but this would have been a massive step up for him to win an event like this.
After that second playoff hole, and before Kitayama goes out, sorry, on the third, wasn't he, went out, the floodlights come on. What's the decision process there? John Paramore just says the floodlights are coming on. Have the players got to agree? What happens?
No, he just said, this is it. You know, we're finishing.
As a player,
it.
Can you say, no, I'm not comfortable with this Monday finish?
Well, you could do, but then you'd be DQ'd, I would think.
Really?
Oh, I would imagine
so. There's no,
so
the players are not approached about
it. No, the referee's in charge.
Because
you know,
this is unprecedented, isn't it? This is floodlights on for the first time in the European Tour.
Well, not necessarily. The Stayshore Tour played in Sharjah a couple of years ago under floodlights. I'll just remind you of that one.
Okay.
I was there.
And, yeah.
And it is difficult. It is difficult when your eyes are adjusting, but it's gradual. You know, that it's got darker and darker and then suddenly the lights come on. So, but it is very, very different. Anybody that hasn't played under floodlights, go and have a go, because the perception of where the ground is definitely changes. And but the guys did great, didn't they? They were so pumped up for it, and some of the shots they hit were just terrific.
I mean, the commentators on television were suggesting, you know, it was getting colder, a little bit of moisture in you know,
yep,
I mean,
yep.
The conditions change very much, don't they?
Yeah.
The players have been saying all week in the build-up to the tournament, before it even got underway, despite it being 26 degrees during the day, the drop-off in temperature at night is quite severe. Still pretty warm evenings, but it's quite a severe drop, and there's a lot of moisture on the ground. The course is playing very, very soft, they were saying. The rough was kind of like, it wasn't too tough to get through, but it was pretty long and lush. So yeah, the conditions, particularly under the floodlights, it would have been pretty moist out there and pretty soft. So have we gone any further, it would have been proper target golf.
And just to get to the final playoff hole, the fourth, because we thought it was going to go to a fifth playoff hole, and Schwab unfortunately misses that short one when people are almost moving back down to the 18th tee again, because they just thought it was an absolute given. I mean, Hatton misses a chance, doesn't he?
Oh yeah, and you saw the look on Hatton's face. Tyrrell thought he was, well, he definitely thought he was walking back down the 18th, for sure. It was quite similar, quite reminiscent of last year, of course, at Turkish Airlines Open, where Haotong missed that sitter to gift Justin the title on the final hole. So, we've seen it before.
Conditions on that putt, would that have been any different because it was in the dark? Do you think it was just the day getting to him, lack of concentration, been out there all day?
It was a bit of a car crash, wasn't it, for Matthias? I mean, he had an awful position through the back of the green, chipped it down, and
had a shocker, didn't he, really,
for ran off. And then, of course, he's thinking, well, Tyrrell's there. Tyrrell's, what, 12, 15 feet for birdie. Now I'm off the green putting. I'm going to have a go. And, of course, he raced it 4 or 5 feet by, which normally probably wouldn't have done, but he thought he needed to make it. Tyrrell's putt didn't go in. Oh, heck, I wish I hadn't have hit that birdie putt so hard. And then, unfortunately, he just missed it on the low side. But it was a great event, really exciting.
Yeah, fantastic finish. Hatton the champion. We can hear from some of the other players involved in that incredible six-man playoff. Austria's Matthias Schwab, first of all, he three-putted that final playoff hole for a bogey six, as we've just talked about, and he couldn't hide his frustration afterwards.
Well, not too great, obviously, but it was a close call. I had some good looks and good chances coming on the stretch in regular play, and didn't take advantage of them. And yeah, in the playoff, I mean, it is what it is.
Obviously, it may take a couple of days, but what are the positives you're going to take out of this week going ahead?
Yeah, I think it's still a second place finish, which is obviously not too bad. But at the moment, it's not too great.
I love those questions. What positives can you take take out of the... He sounded absolutely gutted.
Yeah.
I really felt for him.
He would have been, because he'd played so well all week. And I spoke to his manager, Andrew Chandler, 18 months, 2 years ago, and he said, just watch for this guy. He said, his stats all the way through are excellent, but unfortunately, he doesn't do anything brilliantly. And once he learns to do that, then he'll be a regular winner. And of course, we saw he drove the ball well, hit a lot of greens this week.
Commentators are saying he's, you know, very repetitious, his swing, and he, you know, doesn't raise anything wrong. And golfers go and have a look at what he does, because he does everything right.
But if you're going to win, you need to do something exceptional that week, whether it's to hole a putt or a few shots from off the green, and just to give you that edge. But week in, week out, he's going to be there.
But that was the ultimate irony of that horrible, heartbreaking moment for him, missing that kind of 4 or 5 footer to take it to an extra hole. The fact that he actually was first in the putting stats last week, showed him putting.
No,
so
yeah.
It just but lets him down under pressure, because he's not been there before, perhaps. And it's a tricky sliding putt down that hill. But yeah, maybe it's the lack of experience. But it'll come for sure.
I mean, Tyrrell Hatton tweeted after saying, don't worry, mate, your time will come. But there gets to be a point, I mean, you know, you get all these high finishes, and he sounded absolutely gutty. It's going to take a little bit of time to get that out of his system, isn't it? Or do you just move on as a golfer? It's just a new day and that's it.
Absolutely. Another opportunity next week.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he only has 50 or so starts on the European Tour to his name. He's got plenty of time yet.
Was Porrick Harrington paired with him for one of the rounds or two of the rounds, early rounds this week? Or don't we know?
I'm not too sure.
Is he a future Ryder Cupper, do you think? Is he a, you know, maybe even next
Ryder
Cup?
He is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Padraig will definitely be having a look, and we'll see him being drawn together with Matthias on a number of occasions, I would think, going forward.
And there was an interesting bit on commentary yesterday where they pointed out, which I hadn't heard before, that I think the players on tour, his peers, are calling him the machine because of how good his golf swing is and how repetitive that golf swing is under pressure. A lot of players kind of admire him walking up and down the range. I think he works with Robert Rock a bit, which
he
the growing stable of Robert Rock on tour.
Well, we can hear from another player who tied at second next, America's Kurt Kitayama, who certainly enjoyed the playoff.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. You know, I'm a little disappointed, but gave myself, you know, a couple chances, so, you know, it's too bad. But to get myself right back in it today and to get myself at a win, you know, it's pretty amazing, you know. And, you know, I'm pleased with how today went. You know, obviously the ending was tough, but, you know, but overall it's, you know, great learning experience.
Well, so quick run to the plane now to South Africa, everything packed?
No, not yet. You know, I'm going to be rushing a little bit, but it's all right.
Kurt Kitayama, second, along with five others in Turkey, and Rookie of the Year elect, do we think, Jack?
Well, yeah, it's between him and Bob McIntyre, it seems. Bob McIntyre was in the driving seat because it's all down to the Race to Dubai finish and who finishes higher in those standings come the end of the season. But he has jumped above him with this performance this week, despite Bob having a pretty good week in Turkey as well. So, yeah, it's an interesting battle, that one. But, you know, if he wins it, it won't be undeserved with two victories in your rookie season. It's incredible.
It's an amazing story, Kurt, because 2016 he was playing the Korn Ferry Tour or whatever it was called back in, and he lost his playing privileges, decided he would come across to Europe and go for the tour school. He went through all three stages this time last year of the Q School, got a card and became the fastest player to win two events on the European Tour when he won at the start of the year. He won, was it two events in 11 starts?
Yeah, so he won Mauritius and won Oman as well. Yeah. So two events that don't necessarily catch the headlines, but it's difficult to win golf tournaments anywhere on the European Tour or the Challenge Tour. So to do so, yeah, like you say, when adapting to a new tour, a new lifestyle, a long way from his home in Vegas, as you said before the record, Dan, it's pretty impressive stuff.
I don't think he'd ever been to Europe before, let alone perform the way he's done. And, you know, as well as his two wins, he's had three top five finishes. So what a heck of a first season it's been for him.
Yeah. There's actually only one American in the whole history of the European Tour who's won three times in one season, that being Tiger Woods, of course. And and he's still got two more chances with South Africa and Dubai coming up. Don't rule it out. It could happen.
Yeah, lives in Vegas, only goes back about five times a year. It just goes to show the dedication that all golfers have, yes, but for Americans to play on the European Tour and to play all around the world effectively on the European Tour, you've got to leave your home life at home.
Well, Europe's now his home, you know, and when we say Europe, you know, we visit how many countries? 49 countries, is it? We visit around the globe, not just in Europe. So, but, you know, that's your job. There's a lot of people out there that have, you know, displaced from the homeland to go and earn a living, and Kurt's, he's having a blast. It's great while you're winning, isn't it?
Should the Rookie of the Year always be on points or euros or dollars, whatever it is, gained, or should it be more, you know, merit-based in terms of how many tournaments you've won or some sort of vote? What do you think?
I would lean slightly more towards victories, but, you know, it's a tricky one to call because there's definitely ticks in the boxes for both, isn't there?
This is not to do down Bob McIntyre, who could end up winning it by not winning an event.
Yeah, I suppose it's, you know, you look at it in the football parlance, you know, winning the FA Cup or something like that, is that better than winning the league? And, you know, you've done it over a period, haven't you? Whereas if you win it, it could just be 1 week. But obviously for Kurt, you know, he's proven that it's not just a flash in the pan where Bob's been knocking on the door, and it is so, so hard to win on whatever tour you're playing now. You know, and Bob could look back, where was it that Paul Casey played
in Germany, yeah,
so
played very
well. You know, he could have had a W by that, couldn't he?
Close in Denmark as well. I think he's had a few close calls.
Played well in the British Masters that Marcus Kinnock won, I think. Also,
yeah,
didn't
and
he?
And a fantastic Open Championship performance, which might contribute a lot to the fact that he's so high in the Race to Dubai standings.
Is it called the Rookie of the Year still?
I believe so, yeah.
Is it not called a different name?
Sir Henry Cotton Rookie of the Year Award, I believe.
Yeah. So to give it its full title. Now, another talking point out of Turkey. This is an interesting one. England's Eddie Pepperell disqualified from the action in Turkey after running out of balls on the 13th hole of his third round. It was the fourth hole of the course. He hit his approach to the fourth into the water around the green, had several more attempts, losing four or five balls is the quote, according to Martin Kaymer. And this is what Kaymer said: I've never seen anything like it. I only watched it on television in Tinkop. This is the first time that I've seen it live. Pepperell officially DQ'd for failing to complete the hole and had been two over for his round when he exited the tournament. Did the red mist just fall on Eddie? And he just thought, I'm not having any of this now. I've had enough. I'm going on, walking off.
Yeah, we're talking about Tyrrell as a character.
Yeah.
And Eddie certainly comes into that bracket as well.
I wouldn't have thought Eddie would have been like that, to be honest.
Yeah, well, he speaks his mind, and the frustrations get to us all in different ways. I think he had putted with his sand wedge on the previous hole. He's now come to a par five, and you think, right, I can bang this on the green over the water, maybe get an eagle, move this round forward. And it is really tough when you're not making putts. You're making pars, and you see the leaderboard there is full of red. Everybody's making birdies. You're not. The world's against you, and then, one in the water, another one in the water, another one. Let's just keep going, boys. Right, I'm walking.
I had a chat with Eddie last week, so I wonder if I put the kind of journalist curse on him, because he actually seemed in pretty good form and pretty good spirits when he spoke to me. Maybe that's the Jack effect that it has on him, sadly. But he's an interesting one. The chat I had with him, he was kind of talking about the tough period he went through leading up to 2016, losing his card at the Portugal Masters, and then winning it back at Q School, and then that journey back to becoming a first-time winner on the European Tour in Qatar last year. And he's obviously incredibly good at kind of analysing and processing those tough times when it's kind of over a long period and kind of making sense of them, because he's a very smart chap. But I think maybe, as we all are, prone to those red mist moments, because, yeah, it was clearly completely head gone, wasn't it?
He's come out afterwards on Twitter and said, that's how you do it. I think it was Thomas Peters who might have, made a really good shot on the fourth. I can't remember exactly who it was. But, he's philosophical and he takes it in good humour, as we all know. It happened on the Challenge Tour earlier this season, incidentally. Clement Barrado playing in the first round of the Andalusia Costa del Sol match play, a Challenge Tour event back in June, and he ran out of balls as well. And Tiger Woods, so the story goes, Jack, nearly did when he won the US Open at Pebble Beach by 100 shots or whatever he did.
So, yeah, when he won by 15, so perhaps his most famous major win, or certainly up there with his most famous major wins. Standing on the 18th tee, hits it into the water. I think it was on the Saturday, on moving day, where he was so far in control of the tournament, but we know how things can quickly spiral. And then Steve Williams was begging him to take a four iron with his re-hit, because he knew there was only one ball left in the bag. Tiger didn't know there was one left in the bag. I think they'd been practice putting in the hotel room the night before, which is why they were left in the hotel. Left with one ball in the bag, and Tiger took driver in Tiger fashion, splits the fairway, wins the tournament by 15. Of course he did.
What would have happened if Tiger had put that ball in the water?
So I think
Steve would have been in there. go and find it.
So I think the ruling, certainly at that time, according to Steve Williams, was that if one of your playing partners has the same make and model of ball, that you can borrow one. Because Martin Kaymer actually said that in the interview, didn't he, playing with Eddie Pepperell this week, that he didn't ask us for a ball. So I think Eddie might have just had enough.
Is that right? I'm going to say no one probably would have had Tiger's type of ball then.
Well, no, you have to.
Not.
Yeah, the rule is you have to finish with the exactly same brand of ball that you started with. And as we know, say with a company Titleist, there are umpteen numbers and years. So you could be using a 2016 Titleist ball that has a certain side stamp on it, and they're using 2019.
And that wouldn't have been allowed.
That wouldn't have been allowed.
But it was on the 18th, so perhaps Steve Williams could have made a quick dash across the pro shop to reload the bag. Who knows?
Yeah, they might have let Tiger do that as
penalty
well.
Penalty shot for delaying play. Yeah,
he had enough shots in hand, so he probably could have dealt with that. Right, let's get to the Turkish Open top 10. Jack has got the details for us.
We've got a big tie in 10th place. We have Ross Fisher, JB Hansen, Scott Jameson, Guido Migliozzi, Patrick Reed and Lee Westwood, all tied at minus 16. In tied 7th, we have Robert McIntyre and Shubhankar Sharma, minus 18. And then, of course, we have our big group who made it into the playoff. We have Ben Hebert, Kurt Kitayama, Victor Perez, Matthias Schwab and Erik van Rooyen, all a big tie for 2nd at 20 under par, and Tyrrell Hatton, our champion, after the four-hole playoff.
$2 million he gets, Tyrrell, and if you're tied second, what does it work out? 450 or something like
about
that?
About 400,000. So it's a big drop off, but
it's a massive drop off.
Still a good
payday. Still sizable,
though,
still sizable cash.
Well, it is, because they're adding second place to sixth place and then dividing total was by five. Yeah.
Tyrrell, after the event, says, look, he's not interested about the money. He obviously just wants to win the event. It's a massive event and he's playing for pride and so on and so forth. But the commentators kept on suggesting this is the drop-off. It's from 2 to 450 or whatever it was and so on. But, I mean, at that level, I genuinely believe that it's more about the win for the players. Is that right, Paul?
It is more about the win. Yeah, it's absolutely having that W there, but you can bet your bottom dollar that he's caddy.
$2 million.
His caddy, Mick Donaghy, was there, and that's going to be 10%. Thanks very much, boss.
Very much.
I do love you on this occasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Rob Lee of this parish, usually in your seat, Dan, or often in your seat, Dan, I think he made the point last week regarding the WGC HSBC of Louis Oosthuizen being in the fairway on 18 and not taking on that second shot to the 18th green to try and get himself into the playoff with an eagle, and kind of really criticising that decision because Louis had the career he's had and he's very, very comfortable. But for players who aren't so comfortable, who have kind of clinging onto their card haven't ever...
Yeah, it can be different. You
know, yeah, it's different. It's situational.
I mean, I think you see that with players. Mickelson, I think, is always a good example. He goes for everything, doesn't he? He doesn't think about the dollars. Well, maybe he does think about the dollars. I don't know, you know? There are certain players you know will go for it and will not be concerned about dropping down and dropping a couple of hundred grand.
Helps if you've been in the world's top 50
yes,
for about
does.
27
not
years
anymore,
or whatever
though,
it was.
Yeah. Now then, last week's predictions. And the boys got two free picks last week, slightly different because it wasn't a full field. Jamie Spence, the co-presenter, went for Patrick Reed, who was tied 10th, gaining him 5 points. And Matt Wallace, he had a bit of a shocker, tied 50th, so zero. So Jamie gets five. Rupert Bell, who was our guest, picked out Tyrrell Hatton. Well done to Rupert, 20 points. George Kutsia was 66, so zero. Rob went for Justin Rose and Danny Willett, 0 points apiece to the presenter. So the score is presenters 190, guests 170, co-presenters 150. It's getting tight towards the end of the season. Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game. In the game, Lee Findlay is still the global leader ahead of Russell Gall. Lee captained Justin Rose last week, but had Tyrrell Hatton as one of his picks. Bazdan Uden got the most points from the Turkish Open after going for Hatton, Perez, Schwab, Van Rooyen and Kitayama as five of his six picks. I hope he had some hard currency on that one as well. If you want to get involved, you still can. Head to europeantour.com and register your team for the final few events. Jack, race to Dubai, top 10. I suspect there might have been a few ups and downs, maybe.
Yeah, I'll give you a top 11, actually, because you've got Kurt Kitayama at 11th, so it feels like a salient point to make. You've got Tommy Fleetwood at 10th, Victor Perez at 9th, Eric Van Rooyen going up a couple of spots to 8th, Matt Wallace in 7th, and then at 6th, we have the champion in Turkey, Tyrrell Hatton, 5th, Rory McIlroy, 4th, Matthew Fitzpatrick, 3rd, Shane Lowry, 2nd, John Rahm, and top of the standings, as you were, Bernd Wiesberger.
That'd be some title for Bernd Wiesberger, given his injury issues previously.
Yeah, unbelievable. It's been an incredible season to come back, win a couple of Rolex Series events, to win 3 in total across the year. I don't think he would have dreamt that in his wildest dreams. I think a season with a victory, with a few top fives, and it would have been more than he was bargaining for, frankly. So to do this has been remarkable.
Challenge Tour Grand Final. Francesco Laporta secured victory at the Challenge Tour Grand Final in wire-to-wire fashion, and in doing so, finished the season as the 2019 Road to Mallorca number one. The Italian battled testing conditions to post a closing level par round of 71 and win the Grand Final on 6 under par. 2 strokes ahead of Sebastian Heisler and Robin Sjö Sigrist. Obviously, this is huge for not just those three players, but the players who made it onto the European Tour, Ilse. It's such a pressurised environment when you get to the business end of the Challenge Tour. And congratulations to Francesco Laporta, who can start to plot almost a new life for himself because he's amongst the big boys.
Yeah, that's very true. A long season for the boys on the Challenge Tour, not playing for the monies that we see that the guys on the main tour playing, but now the top 15 have got an opportunity next year to go forward and prove what they can do. And, you know, Francesco, he's an Italian. He spent some time in South Africa. I know that he was down there. His coach was up in Catalonia, so he had long car drives from Italy all the way up to see his coach. He's been around and about, had a number of trips to tour school, but he started the year nicely. He was second in Turkey, or the Turkish Challenge in April, but he really ran into some golden form in September. A couple of third place places. Then he played in the Rolex in Italy, where he finished seventh. So that was his biggest prize fund or check that he was going to get. And then a couple of weeks ago, he wins in China. And then, of course, wins the grand final and finishes number one. So he's going to play in everything that he wants to play in next year. And like you say, he can start planning where I'm going to go and the riches that I'm going
to
make.
Always seems to me, Challenge Tour players have to win two, three, even four times sometimes to sort of get that recognition and to jump up. It seems to be a very, very different grind to what we see in the European Tour. You know, you've got to score low, you've got to win events, and just, you know, getting your top 30s, top 20s is generally not enough on the Challenge Tour to make sure of your card on the European Tour for next season.
Yeah, and also to make a living, frankly. Like, the money's good, the money's not bad, that's for sure. But when you look down the list here for the Challenge Tour Grand Final, kind of the showpiece event, and the winner's walking away with €72,000, it's a lovely payday. It's a lovely prize to win, but, you know, you compare that to the riches on the European Tour where there was $2 million up for grabs. And some of these guys, you know, you look at someone like a Bob McIntyre who was on the Challenge Tour last year and look where he is now. Some of these players could realistically come Turkey next year, be competing for these £2 million prize pots and $2 million prize pots. And yeah, it would be a huge step up for them in terms of lifestyle.
What do we know about any of the graduates? I mean, Callum Hill, we've had on the show, he looks a player going places. Generally, it is players on the up. It's not players who've been on the European Tour circuit and have dropped down and are jumping back up, isn't it? It's youngsters that seemingly are maybe hungrier than those that have been on the circuit for 10, 15 years.
Yeah, Callum was leading the way for most of the season. He ended up finishing second. You know, but he played the two Scottish events on the regular tour where he made the cuts and finished, I think it was 26 both times. So he's already proven there that the step up to him is going to be something that he can manage. So I think it was a great season for him. And there's a few, Jack, you know, there's a great story here. Jack Senior, he's 31 years of age. He played in the Walker Cup at Royal Aberdeen in 2011. Now, these are some of the names that were on his team. Tom Lewis, Andy Sullivan, Stephen Brown, who have all gone on to win. But in the US team, how about this, that he played against all those years ago? Peter Uihlein, Jordan Spieth, Harris English, Patrick Rogers, Russell Henley, Kelly Kraft and Patrick Cantlay. They've all been on there, done it. And there's Jack still playing on the minor tours, still trying to grind it out at Q School.
Do you think that must get to him when he sees the players that he's played against?
It's obviously not, has it? Because he would have given up. And he just kept going. The resilience there was fantastic. He lost 3-2 to Jordan Spieth on the first day of that Walker Cup back in 2011. So it just goes to show that for some people, it's not an immediately, you know, a jump up like it's been with McIntyre and Kirk Kidiyama. Some guys have actually got to go through it and, you know, and pay the dues. And let's hope that Jack Senior will go on and keep his card going forward.
Absolutely. To keep your card now, you have to earn a fair chunk of euros. It's a good, like 300 odd thousand euros a year, I think, to now to keep your card. So, yeah, you're going to earn pretty well if you're just keeping your card and kind of maintaining status on the European Tour. So good luck to them all.
Yeah, just one final point. You mentioned it there. Have we become too accustomed of just seeing players jump up straight away? When we saw that glut of American players, that sort of Jordan Spieth generation just come straight from amateur college game, winning, not just winning on tour, but winning majors, competing in majors, and we just expect it from every single player now.
Yeah, they're not the majority.
No.
But they're the ones
that
grab. It is, and unfortunately there are a lot of parents out there that think that's going to be the route for their child, and they don't. I would say that a Jack Senior story is something that we really should be embracing and going, you know, this is a long journey. There's an apprenticeship to be served here. If you can jump up and make the step up and the money's great. If you can't, you know, just keep going, because these are very, very good players that are playing on the tours below. And then even Victor Perez, who's top 10 of the race to Dubai, 2 years ago, I think it was, he was playing the Alps Tour, which is the third division tour. So Matt Wallace, we know, six times winner on the Alps Tour. So
and Victor Perez was top five in WGC last week in China, and then top in the playoff again this week. It's just it's phenomenal. Dunhill Links champion, of course. It's just it's amazing the step up certain players can make. But you know, someone like Richard Bland comes into that bracket as well. Someone in his 40s has got his European Tour playing rights back after after losing it from being in the European Tour for absolute ages, well over a decade, and to show that level of resilience and to fight back and get yourself back on the European Tour, it's no mean feat.
And one final point on the Challenge Tour, Paul, and this is about a man stepping down.
Yes, Alain de Soutre, who was the director of the Challenge Tour for many years, 20-odd years, I think it was. That was his final event of his career. He's retiring now, and a lot of thanks from a lot of players have got to go to Alain, who's really kept the Challenge Tour bubbling away. Not quite the prize funds, but the opportunities for the guys. And so it's a happy retirement for Alain. Big shout out also for Adrian Moronk from Poland. He becomes the first player from Poland to gain a full playing card on the tour. He finished ninth in the grand final. So a huge shout out to him. And it just goes to show that the European Tour, the number of different flags that you see on the leaderboard and in the fields week in, week out is just astonishing.
We will see no European flags regarding the next news item because we're talking President's Cup. It will return to Australia and the Royal Melbourne Golf Club for a third time next month when the international team, led by captain Ernie Els, will take on the US team, led by captain Tiger Woods. For the first time in President's Cup history, each captain makes four captain's picks instead of two. Tiger Woods named himself...
Shock horror.
No. I'm going to pick me as one of the four wild cards. I mean, I guess he had to, didn't he?
Well, yeah, particularly. I mean,
he's rubbish at match play. Look at his Ryder Cup. What's he doing? Absolutely nuts.
I think in his defence, I mean, you could probably say this of most of the Americans, given the dominance they enjoy in that event. But I think his President's Cup record is somewhat better than his Ryder Cup.
Well, he's only
record.
Playing the rest of the world. He's not playing Europeans.
He's second playing captain in the event between US and international. I didn't know this, but Hale Irwin played in the inaugural matches 25 years ago. So he's not in his own Tiger. He also selected Tony Finau, Gary Woodland and Patrick Reed. And Patrick was playing in Turkey and he seemed very proud of the fact that he got picked. And I mean, he's massively, you know, as a match player, he's someone that you want to see. He gets very involved, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a great character. I actually met him for the first time last week. And he was much more pleasant than you perhaps expect.
Really?
Yeah, he made me wait for the interview, but he was very polite all along
good
the
stuff.
Way. And good chap.
International team captain Ernie Els chose Jason Day, who's had a pretty poor season, but, you know...
Australian, playing down
and
there.
Former world number one. Adam Hadwin of Canada, Sungjae Im of Korea, and Joaquin Niemann of Chile, who won on the PGA Tour recently. Is this going to be easy for the Americans again? Have the internationals won one or tied one? I'm not quite sure what their record is, but it isn't great.
They came very close a couple of years ago. Not the most recent edition because that was an absolute cakewalk for the Americans, but the edition before that, the internationals, I think, were within half a point. It was as close as it could possibly be. So they've got a good team, and actually those World Cup picks, I think, are interesting, the captain's picks. Joaquin Niemann's had a fantastic season, breakthrough on the PGA Tour. Sungjae Im was Rookie of the Year on the PGA Tour. So there's some talent and there's some reserves there for sure.
I think the great thing is that we're going to one of the golf courses in the world, Royal Melbourne. I know it's a composite of the two courses down there, but it asks different questions of the players. So all the long hitting, it's not about that. The strategy to play around there. And it comes at the end of a long, hard year for a lot of these guys. So it'll be interesting. I think the week before is the Tiger Challenge in Bermuda. So we're going to have a lot of the US team having the time difference going down to Melbourne, and of also playing the little jamboree that Tiger throws on for them. So I think the international team have got a great chance.
Let's set the record straight. Are we supporting the international team?
Oh, fully. Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know, you could support the Americans.
Well, you could.
European Tour's the world tour, isn't it? So yeah.
But you know, we've been talking about Kurt Kitayama and David Lipsky and Brooks Koepka's sort of one of our own-ish, maybe not.
It's not the Ryder Cup.
We know it's not the Ryder Cup, so we're supporting the rest of the world, are we?
Yes.
Have you got your rest of the world flag, Ilsey, out?
I will have.
Excellent.
Come that time.
Next up on the Race to Dubai, the Nedbank Golf Challenge, hosted by Gary Player, one of the highlights of the South African sporting calendar. 64 players playing for a purse of $7.5 million. It's very money-laden, this script. I wonder if Richard Boxall's had anything to do with it. The tournament forms part of the Rolex Series, as we know, on the European Tour and is the penultimate event on the Race to Dubai. Gary Player Country Club has staged this for quite a few years. It used to be, was it 8 players, 10 players, 16 players? I mean, it's grown into a proper European Tour event over the years. It used to be just invitational.
Well, it was the $1 million challenge, wasn't it? The first one down there, and you know, with an invitation only. Now it's turned into a fully fledged event, as you will, and it's juicy because it's the penultimate one, as you said, on the Race to Dubai, with a great field and a very, very good golf course as well. I think all the players that go down there do like to play it. The other course down there has got a crocodile pit, and it's
heard about
a resort
that
course. Mm. Whereas this one's a cloverleaf greens, and they tuck the pins away. And you know, for somebody that doesn't hit it a long way, when I've played down there, it's really awkward to access them. But because these guys hit it so far, a bit of altitude there, you know, we're going to have a great week.
Always seems to be a good field as well. An awful lot of the big players, obviously, because it's part of the Rolex Series, and we always get good events, don't we? We get some excellent finishes.
And also, yeah, with stacking up these three big events back to back to back on the European Tour at the end of the season, those who are competing for Race to Dubai honours, you obviously got Bernd Wiesberger competing for that. Matt Wallace is in the shake-up, he's in the top 10. You've got people who will turn up because they're desperate to win that Race to Dubai title, because it is a fantastic honour to be crowned the number one in Europe. So yeah, you see a great field, and then you've got the likes of Tommy Fleetwood there this week, and lots of the homeboys, lots of the home favourites. You've got your Louis Oosthuizen, and so yeah, it's a good field, and it's going to be a great event.
Come on then, we need a couple of players to follow. Jack, you can go first. Who do you like?
I'm going to pick Louis Oosthuizen as my top pick. He's the master of finishing second or top five in events, isn't he? I think he's got the grand slam of seconds in the majors. But still never won on the PGA Tour, but he did win earlier this season on the European Tour in South Africa. So I'm backing Louis to do it again.
Third in China as well, wasn't he, last time
yes.
out?
So yeah,
he's
absolutely
got a bit of form coming into this. So Louis Oosthuizen and...
I'm going to go for Kurt Kitayama, the two-time winner, leader in the Rookie of the Year award race at the moment. So yeah, he's my man. He's a clearly proven winner.
Kitayama and Oosthuizen.
Very good.
So no Europeans for Jack.
No, very good. I'm going to continue that trend, and I'm going to go for two South Africans.
Go on.
I'm going to go for Justin Harding and Erik van Rooyen to be mine to follow this week. On home turf, they've played around that golf course so many times. So it's just a question of whether they can get the putters going. And of course, Justin being one of the few players now with the long broom handle putter, which he wields very, very well, I must say. So I'm looking for one of those two.
He's a player that's come from nowhere. I know he's been around a little bit. Did he play out in Asia first? But
yeah,
he won for the first time on the European Tour earlier this season, didn't he?
Yeah. Plied his trade on the Sunshine Tour as well, obviously back home in South Africa, and won a few times there. So proving himself as a winner. Like we said, it's difficult to win at any stage. But he's been burst onto the scene incredibly. The win in Qatar was fantastic. His performance at the Masters actually might be his most impressive performance of the year. He was right in that shape.
Right up there, wasn't he?
Three rounds in the 60s on your Masters debut is, pretty good going.
What are the differences in terms of playing in South Africa? Is it the greens? You mentioned altitudes. Why is it different to playing, say, in Turkey last week, or just generally European Tour fairways?
The grasses are slightly different as well. Temperature is going to be warmer. The ball will fly an awful lot further, even though the weather was great in Turkey. But of course, you've got the afternoon thunderstorms that come on, so there may be some interruption in play. And of course, the South African guys are used to that all the time. You play on the Sunshine Tour, you play through an afternoon, you've got an afternoon draw in Johannesburg or up Pretoria Way, and you know that there's going to be, you can see the clouds coming, they'll go, you'll sit in the clubhouse for an hour and a half, and then you'll go and continue your round. So those guys are used to that. For some, may not be as easy. But I'm going for the local flavour there.
Van Rooyen, who won in Scandinavia, when he tackled that first player fault, I mean, to me, he meant business. He was the one who was putting that expectation on his shoulders. Has he jumped up a little bit of a level, do you think? Is he in that sort of upper echelon of regular European Tour players fairly quickly?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was at Carnoustie. He started really well at the Open in 2018. So, yeah, he had to kind of like sporadic good performances, but the fact he's in the top 10 in the Race Dubai, I think he's eighth at the moment, kind of speaks volumes about his improved level of consistency, even if we forget that drive at the first playoff hole because it was a bit ropey.
But one of the things has added to his improvement as a player and his performances is the fact that he sought out the referees on the tour to help him with his reputation of being a slow player. And so they put GoPro cameras on him. He was able to watch himself not hit the golf shot, if you will. And he was so surprised that he's changed his pre-shot routine. He is playing a little bit quicker now and his scores are coming down. And so that was every credit to him to look at all sorts of aspects as how am I going to improve, and playing quicker has definitely helped him.
My picks, Matt Fitzpatrick. He surely deserves a win this season, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's had a couple of second places, couple of high finishes recently.
About four or five second places over the last 12 months. I think one back end of last season, and I think he's finished second on the PGA Tour as well. I don't think he's in that bottler category. I think he's just run into some very good golfers on those particular weeks. I think maybe it was the one event that Andrea Pavan won that he had big chances to win, but the others...
I think the people you put in the kind of the bottler in inverted commas category tend to be people with shaky short games, and you definitely couldn't accuse Matt of that. He's got perhaps the best short game on the European Tour, so maybe that's why he doesn't come into that category.
And one of the best caddies in Billy Foster. So when it comes to it, Billy will keep him calm. And Matt's won so many times now, he's... really needs to be pushing through as in his own mind to becoming top world class, not just one of the best European players, but one of the world's best players.
Which is what he was as an amateur, of course, won the US amateur. So he was right up there in those stakes. So yeah, maybe needs to kick on and get a few more of these closed out.
My second pick is Lee Westwood, who has won on this course, according to my stats here, on four different occasions. He won the Nedbank Golf Challenge in 2010 and 2011. He won the Dimension Data Pro-Am in 2000. And he won this event last year. And he still looks a fantastic player. He looks more at home. Well, I say more at home. He looks more composed and relaxed on the golf course at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, extremely fit as well, Lee. Nothing seems to faze him. Happy, got the girlfriend caddying last year, didn't he? When you've got a happy golfer at home, you've got a chance that there's going to be a happy golfer on the golf course as well, and things to be in a good place for Lee, which is great to see.
Another man doing some work with Robert Rock as well, so that's obviously working well for a lot of players, Matt Wallace included. So yeah, he's in that stable as well.
Just a couple of other players I want to mention, one who's not playing this week actually, but one who is, Tommy Fleetwood. I know we've talked about Tommy before, and he's a player that we put so much expectation on now because what he did in the Ryder Cup and when he won the race to Dubai. But this calendar year of 2019 hasn't quite gone to plan for him, has it?
He's not holding putts. Spoke to his coach, Alan Thompson, the other week. And, Tommy's still working as hard as ever, but the ball isn't going in the hole for him. And that is the difference between winning that week or finishing down the field. And unfortunately for Tommy after last year, this is what's happened this year. He just hasn't had those odd putts that go in that boost your score, but you can't count him out, can you?
Came second at the Open. I know it was a distant second to Lowry in the end, but came second at the Open, so did come close this season to landing by far the biggest win of his career. So hasn't all been a tale of woe for Tommy.
And just speaking of tales of woe, sort of, Justin Rose has dropped off a little bit over the course of the summer, hasn't he? Won on the PGA Tour very early this season, changed clubs, but there's been one or two articles I've seen suggesting that he's in a bit of a slump. Obviously, a Justin Rose slump is not the same sort of slump that other golfers have. But are we concerned about Justin as well in his game at the minute?
No.
Or not? Is it just a bit cyclical and he'll be back sooner rather than later?
We keep saying that it's so difficult to win, and there are so many good players there that you just need all parts of your game together. And most players on tour, if you say, would you like a slump like Justin Rose, they would say, I'd love a career.
Yeah, I think it's something like 10 top 10s this season as opposed to 20 odd or something.
Phenomenal.
The
level of his play is quite incredible. And when it drops below that, then you start asking questions.
Well, no, I do. Yeah. Nobody else does. It's just me. Anyway, I was writing those articles I was talking about. So those are the picks. A reminder, Jack has gone for Oosthuizen and Kitayama. Paul, has picked out two South Africans in Harding and Van Rooyen, and I've gone for Fitzpatrick and Westwood. That is your lot for this week. Many thanks for listening. Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com and the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Next week, we will review the Nedbank Golf Challenge and we'll look ahead to the European Tour season's final event. That's the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai. That is not to be missed. But for now, from Paul Eales.
Goodbye.
From Jack Haywoods.
Goodbye.
And from myself, Dan Roebuck. It is goodbye. We'll speak soon.